I'm going to read this morning, just the opening here. I'm going to read from the classic Amplified version again, so you can follow in your Bibles and see how it is amplified in this version. And of course, then I'll be preaching out of the New King James. But let's read or follow along as I read this Amplified, starting in verse 17, actually. I'm going to read 16 and 17. Therefore, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. Verse 17 then. For our light, momentary affliction, this slight distress of the passing hour, is even more and more abundantly preparing and producing and achieving for us an everlasting weight of glory, beyond all measure, excessively surpassing all comparisons and all calculations, a vast and a transcendent glory and blessedness never to cease. So it's quite an expansion there, but they really hit the meaning of these verses right on with this amplified, classic amplified version. It's really good. So again, we've been looking over the past, weeks about not to lose heart. We gave the reasons of why Paul didn't lose heart. There was at least three reasons. And the verses that we're going to look at today, finishing up verse 17 and then doing verse 18, but there's at least three reasons why Paul said not to lose heart. He was convinced in his inner man that he would be raised from the dead, regardless of what happened to him physically. Whether he died of old age or he died of martyrdom, he was convinced that he would be raised from the dead. That was the first why. He didn't lose hope. He didn't lose heart. He didn't faint, because he knew that the grave was not his goal, but the presence of Christ was. So he was okay with anything in between. The second thing that we learn through these verses, that even though his body was aging, and I don't know if anyone else here in the room has experienced that your body might be aging, surprise, that even though his body was aging, his outer man was perishing, that is wasting away, decaying, becoming corrupt. Those are different meanings of the word. Even though that was happening to him, he knew that his inner man was being renewed, being refreshed, being restored, being renovated day by day as he spent time in the presence of the Lord. So there was the second reason why he didn't lose heart. And then the third reason we find in verse 17, where he said, because this light affliction. And so he accounted everything that happened to him as just a light affliction. He lumped them all together, all of the trials. And we've, them. We've read through them, whether it's in, chapter 1, chapter 4, chapter 11 of this very book, 2 Corinthians. It's his most personal biographical book, is this second epistle of Corinthians. But that third reason was that while he knew that these persecutions and these afflictions came upon him, he was able to count them just light, something almost weightless they were. And in comparison to that which is heavy, which was coming to him, the reward of glory that was coming to him, he was able to look at him and lay them in the scales and find that his light afflictions. And again, none of us in this room, I think I can boldly say, have experienced close to what Paul experienced for tribulation and through affliction. We read them last week, and I don't know if any of ours would even begin to fit into Paul's list of what he went through, because none of us have been scourged 39 times, 5 times, or beaten with rods, which I said was maybe even worse, 3 times, or stoned, or shipwrecked, spent a night and a day in the ocean, not on a yacht, maybe on a board, shark bait. We can't fit what we call our tribulation and trials, and not to minimize them, because they're real to us. They're all we have of these things. But Paul said they're light in comparison to what I'm going to gain in glory. So because of that, he does not lose heart. So we must capture and let the Spirit of God work in us. I need to do this, that he works in me, that when I go through what I call trials and what you call trials or persecutions or afflictions, that I would have the mind of Paul, who had the mind of Christ, who said, you know what? This is just a light thing, because when I get to glory, I'm going to get something so much greater. So Paul says, I do not lose heart. So, and then last week we looked at verse 17, and I had four headings. We got through three of them, and it was all about afflictions. Afflictions mean that which presses upon us. It is a crushing weight and power. That's what affliction means, something that oppresses us. And Paul again called them light. And I had three, I actually had four headings. One was that afflictions are light, afflictions are temporary, and afflictions are working in our behalf. Isn't that wonderful? Romans 5 says tribulation works for us. It works this out of our character. And we read about it from a great Puritan named Thomas Watson, where he says that afflictions make the Christian man or woman happy. Remember that? And then he listed five reasons or so why a Christian is happy about being afflicted. This is the mindset of the Christian. This is the mindset of Paul. So again, afflictions are light. Afflictions are temporary. Afflictions are working for us. The fourth one, which is now what we'll get into, is that there are rewards connected to afflictions. Afflictions bring award or rewards. So that's the fourth thing. And then the fifth thing, which we pick up in verse 18, is that the discipline of looking. How to look. What do we look on? The discipline of teaching our hearts and our souls to look. It is a choice. We talked about it this morning a little bit in the fellowship about, I think it was Angie, I'll put her on the spot. She said, talked about count it all joy when you fall into all these trials. And she said, sometimes I don't do that. You know, sometimes I fall short. Well, we all do. But see, this is the mindset. This is like Thomas Watson, who says the Christian who is afflicted is a happy Christian. Count it all joy. And it's a mindset that we must get in, because, well, Paul said it, didn't he, in the book of Acts, I think chapter 20, that through much tribulation we shall enter the kingdom of heaven. Forgive me for talking about afflictions, trials, temptations, sorrows, heartbreak, but that's life. If none of us ever experienced that, then I wouldn't bother talking about it. But we've all experienced it. This is reality. And how do we deal with it? What is our mindset when we go through it? These are tools that God gives us to glorify Him. So we're going to look then at the reward of the believer. That's the fourth thing that we looked at from verse 17. So let's read it again. Verse 17, our light affliction, which is but for a moment. Isn't that wonderful? Do you think that the affliction you're in, have you thought of it, it's just momentary? It's going to change. You know, what's the old saying? This too shall pass. Yeah, it does. This too shall pass. So our light affliction, which is but for a moment, it is working. It is working. It is not on unemployment. It is not set aside. Your afflictions are working for us. They are working for me. Our afflictions work. See, these are things to encourage us. Paul, the Spirit through Paul wants to encourage the Christian people to be encouraged that your afflictions are working for you. Again, we must have the right attitude. That's where he goes into. But anyway, our afflictions, which are but for a moment, they are working for us a far more exceeding and an eternal weight of glory. So something is heavier in the scales. Again, here's the afflictions, but something is much heavier, far exceeding is heavy. And we'll look at that word for a moment. The balances are way up. This light affliction is here, but something weighty here is so much worth, so much more. So he's put them in the balances. Your afflictions, they're light. And this thing over here, this glory that comes as we are letting the Spirit of God conform us and humble us in the affliction, it is weighty. And not only just weighty, this is temporal, this is eternal. So the playoff of words is tremendous in here. Peter is good at that too in his epistles. So again, verse 17, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and an eternal weight of glory. Okay? So the affliction is light, the reward is heavy. See that? The affliction is light, the reward, the glorious reward is heavy. And it's not just worth more, it's eternal. It's not temporary. It doesn't waste out. When we get to heaven, what we've gained by being faithful in this life to Jesus Christ is going to carry through all of eternity. It's not temporal like our afflictions are. These are things that we got to meditate on. And, you know, Hebrews 12 talks about, after it says, I beseech you by the mercies of God to present your bodies. It goes on, and be ye transformed by the renewing of your minds, that you might know what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Our minds need to be transformed to line up with Scripture, to line up what God is saying instead of what our poor self says or the world tells us to do. So again, afflictions, they're light. The rewards are weighty. The afflictions work for us a far more exceeding and an eternal weight of glory. The little phrase, again, I'm reading from, like I said, the New King James, where it says it is far more exceeding. In verse 7 of this chapter, you'll find another word there, which is excellence. But we have this treasure in the earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power, the excellence of the power. The word there in the Greek is hyperbole. That's where we get our word hyperbole. So it's something that goes beyond. So in verse 7, it's talking about the power. It goes beyond everything that we know. Well, here, it's talking about that the reward that we're getting, but for a moment, is working for us a far more, that which has gone beyond. So whatever the affliction is, whatever our pain is, whatever the suffering we have gone through, there's a glory coming that is, it means to be thrown beyond. It is beyond what that is. And then Paul adds the other word, exceedingly. So far more exceeding. And what Paul is beyond himself when he says these things, far more exceedingly. The excess of excellency, this is what the phrase means. Now, if we put it all together, far more is the Greek word hyperbole, where we get hyperbole. But when we put this together, the far more exceeding. So exceeding is a good word. If someone, you had a bill and someone paid you exceeding beyond your bill, that would be good. But Paul said, no, it's far more than exceeding. How do you get far more than exceeding? You know, that's way out there, and that's what it means to be thrown beyond. So this is what he's saying. Our reward is way out there. How do we compare it? What can we weigh it to? So, again, it means the excess of excellency and eminence. It's beyond the ability to measure, basically to exceed exceedance. So it exceeds even anything that's exceedance. Exceedingly exceeding. Excess to excess. Glorious in the highest possible degree. This is a special degree. It was not enough for Paul to use the ordinary, the highest expression available to him in the Greek language, which the Greek language was the fullest of languages. That's why we have the word love, where Greek has it at least four times. Or the word world. We have one when we say world. The Greek has several words, at least three, for the word world. It was a very expressive language, and the Bible was written in that, the New Testament. But Paul comes up with the word that even the Greeks don't have it. He makes up his own word, as it were, and that's this phrase that he uses, far more exceedingly. He takes the highest Greek word that he can use to express something that's over and beyond, and then he adds to it and makes his own word that even exceeds that word, because he cannot find a word large enough to express the blessings that you and I will receive in glory. This is what Paul does. It's just absolutely amazing. All other known hyperboles have fallen short of this expression, that the eternal glory which awaits the faithful Christian. There is no way that it can be expressed in our language, that which waits for us. In 2 Corinthians or 1 Corinthians chapter 2, 9 and 10, for eye hath not seen, ear hath not heard, neither has it even entered into the minds of men the things that God has prepared for those who love him. However, the Spirit has revealed some of it to us. It goes on in verse 10. The Spirit has revealed some. We have a feeling. We have a unction. We have an intuition of coming is going to be glory. And so the afflictions that are light, they're okay because they're working for me. So now you can see why you want a lot of afflictions, because they're working for you. We got workmen for us. We got laborers. They're called afflictions. And they work for us. Do anybody want someone to come and clean their house? That'd be great. But this is a different type of workman. We've got workmen. It's called affliction. You know, so, and we try to dodge them. You know, we shouldn't try to get into them. But when we're in them, let's use them. You know, let's make him work for us. So Paul is writing about his trials experienced in the will. Now, this is important. Paul is writing about the trials, the afflictions that happened to him in the will, in the walk, and in the work of God. They're not because of his stupidity. They're because he's in the will of God and he obeys God. And he's step by step, he follows the Lord, and that may lead into tribulation. This is how God works in us. Hebrews 12, that's what it talks about. If you are a son of God, a child, then God will discipline us. And it's not pleasant at the time, but afterwards it yields that peaceable fruit. Afterwards, it's not forever, it's just temporal. So it ties into what Paul is saying here. So this is all part of that phrase of afflictions work rewards. Sufferings in themselves do not make us Christ-like. People can go through all kinds of things, but the humble yielding of our souls to God must be the attitude. Psalm 84, no good thing will he withhold from them who walk uprightly. Do I believe that? When everything is against me, when people have misused me or gossiped about you or left you out or something happens tragically in your life, can you say, no good thing will God withhold from me if I walk uprightly and settle for that? Let patience have her perfect work, having counted it all joy. Will I do that? For some who go through trials, they only get harder, and they get more bitter, and they get more cranky, and they hold resentments against people. So it isn't the trial necessarily, it's the attitude in the trial. Yeah. Oh, that we would have the attitude in the trial to stop and just hold it. Let me back off. I know I've been mistreated according to what I think, but let me back off of that. That seemed unfair. Let me just back off and see, what is God, what can he do with this? What should my attitude be? And we take a step back and look at it. In the Christian, the effect of these afflictions is to produce in our lives here on earth Christ-likeness. We must decrease and he must increase. So afflictions come, sorrows happen, mistreatments come, sickness comes, whatever it might be, loss, death, whatever it might be. But that is so that we would be conformed to the image of Christ in time as we walk on this side of the curtain of the veil. It is that Christ's likeness would be worked inside of us, and in glory it is to be endued. So here it works Christ's likeness in us as we submit to them, not as we get cranky, justify ourselves, go and complain to everybody else about that one over there, but just settling it with the Lord and trusting him. In life now, it works Christ's likeness, but in glory, it's to be endued with a reward and a glory which far exceeds the trial, far more exceeding than the trial. Whatever the trial costs you, man, the bigger the trial, the bigger the reward. So when you're going to ask for afflictions, ask for big ones, because the rewards will be that much bigger. Anyway. Jesus said, in the world you shall have tribulation. What's the next phrase? Be of good cheer. That's right. Be of good cheer. Yeah. John 16:33. The trials of this present life, this is important, the trials of this present life and the glory of what awaits us in heaven are inseparable. The trials of this life and the glories that we will receive, the reward that we receive, they are linked together. They are links of the same size. If I avoid all affliction, all sorrow, all hardship, all sacrifice, if I avoid them or harden myself under them, I have a thread-like link, chain link. It's made of something weak, like a thread. And when I get to glory, my reward will be in like kind as that. But if I embrace them and I love Jesus in the midst of the trials and the tribulations, I realize, Lord, I just humble myself. Yea, though you slay me, yet I will trust you. And it builds a link of solid, hardened steel, as it were, gold or silver. And over when we get to glory, that's what we gain over there. It's of like kind. The two cannot be separated. Your reward and your afflictions are linked together, inseparably linked together. This is the attitude that we have to build in our minds. Laying up treasures in heaven while on earth. How are you going to lay up treasures on earth? I asked a question 2 weeks ago, or maybe it was just a week ago. Time goes so fast when you're having fun. Do you have an offshore bank account? Do you have an offshore bank account? It's not in Switzerland. I could say, do you have a Swiss bank account? No, that's not. I'm talking about an offshore bank account. We lay up treasures in heaven. Matthew 6, 19 through 21. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust decay and destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, and I might add, and where inflation robs it. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust nor inflation nor thieves do not break in, and they do not steal. For where your treasure is, there shall your heart be also. How do you build up that treasure in heaven? Through afflictions, through sacrifices, through giving. It's the man and woman who gives the most in this life who receives the most in the next life. We worry so much about saving, 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 and giving to the point, just to the point where it doesn't hurt us. Again, I love the monkism from the detective Monk. I was taken by shock. I've used it before, but it's so fitting where he says, if you know who Monk is, he is so self-absorbed. It's all about him. And finally, a friend loses a loved one, and he comes up and he says to them, is there anything I can do to help that won't inconvenience me? Because when they first said that, is there anything I can do to help? I thought, that's not Monk. That's not his character. I mean, this was like in season 7 or something. There was 8, I think, seasons. And that isn't Monk. And then it was just that pause for just a second. And then it was, that doesn't inconvenience me. Well, we want to set up treasures in heaven. And there is inconveniences. There are sacrifices that we do. So we see something of this reward mentioned in Matthew 25 when he talks about the talents. The one was given 5 and 1 2 and 1 1. What did they do? They took the 5 and they traded it. Trade is a picture of effort, exerting something to trade. It means go out and do something with what I've given you. Give it to the, let people use it, be used, whatever. That means trading. And what happened then? When he gets to glory, he said, I've gained 5 more. And he said, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of the Lord. And he says to him, you will rule now over 10 cities. His reward was equal to what he had traded. The man who just buried it in the earth and said, I'm on anything I can do to help that won't inconvenience me, he ended up with nothing. And in fact, he lost that which he had. So again, in the scriptures, over and over again, it talks about that. Matthew, or in Revelation 7, 15, 21, all these places talk about the reward. And I'm not going to take the time to go there. I'd like to go to Revelation 7, but let's go there just quickly, just to look a bit at a reward in Revelation 7. Again, there's, like I said, we could go to chapter 7, 4, 5, 21, 15, 22. All these chapters have something to say about it. But if we drop down in chapter 7, verse 14, we'll just jump in at the thought. And I said to him, sir, you know. So he said to me, and he's asking about who are these around the throne. These are the ones who have come out of great tribulation. They've washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. See, the sacrifice there is the Lamb who gave the blood. It's not the person with the robe. It's the person who gave the blood, which is Jesus Christ. We've been granted a robe that's been washed in someone's sacrifice. It's a gift. It is a reward. Verse 15, therefore, because of that, they are before the throne of God, and they serve Him day and night in His temple. And he who sits on the throne, this is one of the rewards, he will dwell among them. They shall neither hunger anymore, nor thirst anymore. The sun will not strike them, nor any heat. For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them and lead them to the living fountains of waters. And he shall wipe away every tear from their eye. Some of the rewards. Meditate on these things when trials come or afflictions come. And causes fear and pain. In chapter 22, I'll just read it, verse 12, Jesus says, and behold, I am coming quickly, and my reward is with me, to give to everyone according to his work. I am coming quickly, and my reward is with me, to give to those who have worked for me. My reward, I'm coming with my reward. So there is this reward that afflictions purchase for us. So that's the working, the reward of afflictions. And the fifth point then that I had through these verses was the discipline of looking, because this is important. We understand that, okay, a faithful person who goes through afflictions and trials, if I am faithful, it is working for me a far more exceeding weight of glory, eternal weight of glory. It works for me, but not automatically. While we look, verse 18, while we look, not at the things that are seen, but the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen, they're just temporal. They're just passing through. But the things that are unseen, they are eternal. They are forever. So there's a job for us to do in the midst of this, and it's what how we look at things. It's our perspective of things. It's our choice, our attitude in these things. So I'm going to read something from a man named Charles Simeon. Anybody know who Charles Simeon is? Great commentator, late 1700s through the first maybe half of the 1800s. He, by the way, he pastored the same church for 54 years. He pastored faithfully. He chose to be single. He never married because he knew as a single man he could give more of his life to Christ and to the church. And so he made a conscious decision as a young man, I'm going to remain single for the rest of my life so I can serve the bride of Christ, so I can serve the church. For 54 years, he labored in the same church faithfully. He's got a set of commentaries, 21 volumes. Yeah, I got them. They're pretty rare. 21 volumes of them. And now there's a ministry that's called Simeon's Trust. And it's a tremendous ministry, and they teach Christians how to read the Bible, because he was an expert on interpreting in the Bible. He was very good at it, how to put it together. Anyway, this is a quote from him. The Christian in every state, whether of prosperity or adversity, he differs widely from the unconverted man. While others are elated by the one, again, he talked about prosperity or diversity, while others are elated by the one and depressed by the other, he is kept in equal frame of mind. As he does not place his happiness in earthly things, he is not much affected either way with the acquisition or the loss of earthly things. He is thankful for success, but not overjoyed, as though some great and eternal thing had happened unto him. And he is patient in tribulations and afflictions, knowing that in the issue it shall work for his good. To this effect, the apostle speaks in this text, in which he assigns the reason why, notwithstanding the greatness of the affliction, so he recognizes that the afflictions are great, but to understand why he was kept from fainting under them. And his words afford us a proper occasion to consider what he says. Again, verse 18, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are unseen. For the things which are seen are temporary, and the things which are not seen, or things that are not seen are eternal. So there's our verse, this last verse for us. While we do not look, so we don't look. The word look there means we get our word scope there. Or telescope comes from the word. While we do not look, it means that you're really focusing in on something. You're dialing it in so there's a focus as you look at a telescope and you want to see the moon or the star or whatever it is. You put it to your eye and then you focus it in so you can really see it. While we look, the word is to gaze, to dial in. It means, and it's the mark of the goal, that which we have our eye fixed upon. So in trials and afflictions, we've got to fix our eye on something. There's a choice. Do we fix our eye on the temporal, that which is momentary, or do we fix our eye on the eternal? And this is what it says, dial it in. Get the telescope, get the scope to your eye, and dial in on the eternal, what's happening in the eternity, what's happening in our souls. Dial in on the future, not on the present. For these things are but a light affliction, and they work for us a far more exceeding weight of glory while we look, while we dial in and scope into these things. Philippians 3:14, the word is used when he says, I press towards the goal or the mark of the prize of the upward call of God. Paul's taking a telescope, and he's focusing on the goal of his calling to fulfill that, and he's focused on it. This is what he does. While we look. The end to which, these are other definitions, the end to which our attention, our desires, and our efforts are directed. Where do we spend our efforts? Matt talked it a little bit here in the beginning. Where do we spend our efforts? Where are they at? Are they in, what is it, whatever it is, the smartphoney things? What am I trying to say, Matt? Thank you. Social media, yeah. I'd like to be social, but I don't know about on media. Anyway, if I am, hopefully I am. Anyway, you know, so what are we focusing on? To take aim and to keep it in one's eye. Look, okay, so we got to stop. When you're hurting, and you will be tomorrow, maybe this afternoon, maybe you are now, make a decision. I'm going to focus in on something. Is it the injustice that was thrown my way? Is it on the weight that I have to carry? Nobody has a burden as big as mine. It's funny the way we think, isn't it? God, do you know what I'm going through? Where are you? Whatever. We may have to make a choice of what we're going to focus on. And we dial in and we bring into focus. God is working. Let me look into eternity and see who's around that throne. Am I there? What am I doing around the throne? And how did I get there? Did I earn it? And the glory that goes on and the praise. Imagine sitting with him in his throne, being received as an equal, as a son of God, and a joint heir with Jesus Christ. And all those, to meditate on those things are foreign to us because we meditate on what kind of car we're going to buy next or whatever it might be. But these things we must look at. The word look here is used in the Old Testament. Eve saw that this fruit was good. She looked at it and she saw that it was good. David looked at Bathsheba in 2 Samuel 11. He looked at Bathsheba and he considered. See, it's used there. Isaiah uses it wonderfully when he quotes prophetically from the Lord, "Look unto me and be saved, all ye ends of the world, for I am God and there is no other. Look unto me and be saved." Look unto me. See, dial it in. It's a choice we make and we focus into it. Yes, this is what I'm going to do tomorrow when the devil comes at me and I'm tempted to be discouraged or depressed. I've got a choice to make. And my flesh wants to pamper me, which is harmful. It brings just the opposite. But the Spirit says, no, rise up, Tom, and look at the eternal. Okay, I've got a choice to make. Let me dial in. Let me get that telescope out and focus in on that. Bring it in, you know, zoom it in so it's close. Pull it in and zoom it up. So the things, not the things of this world, but the things of eternity is what we got to look at. These are the things that are seen. The things that are seen are like wealth and pleasure and fame. And in this case, afflictions. They're what we see right now as afflictions. Sometimes it's so big. You know, but we've got to get beyond that and to see the unseen. The unseen is the love and the favor of God, the renewing and the renovation or the transformation of the inner man. That's what's not seen. What is God doing? Oh, if I can just embrace the cross and die to myself, I'll be conformed to the image of Christ. And we don't gaze at ourselves, but this is what the Spirit of God is doing, the transformation of the inner man, and then the glory and the joy of heaven. These are the things, the love and the favor of God, the renewing of the inner man, and the glory and the joy of heaven. And if I am not a Christian, if you are not a Christian, you have no clue what we're saying right now. It's like, what are you talking about? Who would glory in their afflictions? Paul says, I would much rather glory in my weakness. Right? That God may be glorified. What kind of a foreigner is this guy? But that's the mind that we must develop by the Spirit of God. It says in there, have the mind of Christ. And we have the mind of Christ. In Philippians 2, let this mind be in you that was also in Christ Jesus, who humbled himself. So this is what it is. Paul has learned to look off onto Jesus, looking off of the temporal to the eternal. Hebrews 12. Therefore, seeing we are encompassed by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us run the race with endurance that is set before us. How? Looking off of one thing, the temporal, and looking on to Jesus, who is the author and the finisher, dialing in. Get that telescope and dial it in, focus it in, and pull it in strong, these eternal things. Looking on to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Trials and afflictions refine the soul, and they teach us to look, to revel in the unseen. See, this is our minds are so taken up with technology and social media and this and that, they just jump to it. Imagine to sit alone for 20 minutes and do nothing but contemplate on eternity, on Christ in heaven. You seated before him or bowing before him. What is the old Faber hymn? O Father of Jesus, love's reward. What rapture it will be to lie prostrate before thy throne and gaze on thee. To gaze. When's the last time we've gazed on him? See, this is the mind. See, we're so this worldly that we miss other worldly things. If the mind is set on carnal things, when it is robbed of these carnal things, it will be cast down. See, it's a measurement of how much things upset us. When things in the world upset us so much, is it because our hearts are so set on these temporal things instead of eternal things? The apprehending of that which is unseen becomes a renewing for the inner man. The burden and the affliction only becomes light. Paul says these light afflictions, they're only light if we look, if we are looking. If we're not looking, they're heavy. And we bear the full weight of our trials and our race that we're to run. We bear all the weight until we look off and see him. That's how we run the race, looking off. Afflictions and hardships become light when the Christian compares them with the weight of glory to come. The seemingly long duration of sorrow and hardships that we're under become short when we compare them to the eternal realities of glory that will be ours. When we compare them to eternity, how do we weigh them out? They become short then. They are, like Paul said, they're these momentary afflictions, but only when we gaze at eternal things. They're light, but only when we gaze at heavenly and heavy things that are glorious in heaven. Those eyes who are not on the seen and the transient, but on the unseen and the eternal, can detect beneath the decay of our outer man and the pressures and the burdens which is being daily renewed. We can detect we're being renewed. We go through these trials and somehow we find ourselves singing and worshiping in the midst of them because we've looked to heavenly things. Paul and Silas in prison, they've been whipped and beaten and they're thrown in this junky prison full of filth and rats and who knows what. And yet at midnight, they can't sleep. They're probably in pain. But they take the telescope and they look into heavenly things and they sing praises to God because Paul had trained by the Spirit of God. He trained his mind how to think. Paul's secret of joy came from his discipline of looking and contemplating and enjoying the realities of eternity. His strength, his endurance, his perseverance in life came from the place that he habitually looked to. He wasn't by nature a strong man. I don't believe Samson was either. I believe he wasn't because they always wondered where his strength came from. So I picture Samson to look like Don Knotts. And Paul wasn't a strong man. He had to look to the Lord to get him by. And so he could see these things. He lived as Moses did in Hebrews 11:24. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. For he endured as seeing him who is invisible. That's how Moses lived. 40 years in the desert, just wondering, God, I thought you called me to save the people, and here I am tending sheep, and my father-in-law is taking advantage of me all the time. You know, there he is. But he endured as seeing him who was invisible. Think of Noah, who for 120 years labored on an ark, waiting for something called rain. It may have rained before, it may not have. There's debate. But imagine, you know, building an ark out in the middle of the Middle East. You know, and maybe it was in Iraq, building an ark there in the desert. You know, yeah, big flood's coming. For 120 years, you know, but what he had a faith. He looked beyond and saw things that were eternal. So this is how Paul runs the race. The practice of looking to the eternal made light that which would normally be heavy. It makes brief and momentary that which normally would drag out seemingly in ourselves. What a lesson for us to learn. To look into that which is eternal and real. The unseen lightens the weight of the burden. So look at the unseen. It lightens the weight of the burden, making it light. To fix our minds on that which is seen. The now, that which is seen, fixing our minds on that which is seen, which is now, causes us to bear the full weight of this. And so Jesus says, come unto me, all ye that are heavy laden, and I will lighten your load. Yoke yourself with me, and I will lighten your load. But it's, again, fix ourselves on Jesus, not on the burden. Because all of us are carrying a burden. All of us carry a burden. All of us carry things, whatever it is, whether it's the state of our children, the state of our health, the state of whatever it is, we all carry burdens. But what are we going to look at? You know, let them work for us. Let's hire some more burden bearers, you know, some of these afflictions. So the inner man is renewed daily by looking off unto that which is invisible. For the Christian, death does not terminate our joy, but it becomes the entrance into our full possession of that glory, which our present blessedness is just a pledge. So what we know of glory now, it's just a pledge of what we're going to get. And death doesn't cease that, stop the joy. It's the opening into a greater joy. While we look, again, so the first part of it, while we look. This is the secret process, invisible both to the people that look at us from the outside and even to ourselves. We don't even know sometimes what's going on. We don't understand it, but we know this. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. For by it the elders retained a good report. They had witnesses borne to them that they were faithful. Hebrews 11, 1 and 2. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. This is how we live. We don't understand it. The process is invisible, but God says it's working for us. So am I going to believe him when I go through trials and I trust him? Yeah, I'm going to believe him. I won't have to justify myself. I'll let him do it if he needs to and just receive my glory in heaven. The while we look, again, is the normal Christian life. This is the normal biblical life. What we are talking about this morning isn't exceptional. Like, wow, that's way out there. Well, it is, but it's supposed to be the normal Christian life. It is the normal Christian life, the atmosphere, the discipline of life. So while we look to the eternal and the unseen, the things that now are seen, they become light and they become momentary. But it should be the normal Christian life. This is what we are to develop when we go through these things, looking to Jesus, looking off to Jesus, the author and finisher. So am I learning to look off from my trials? Am I training myself to focus on my afflictions or to gaze on the eternal realities of God and the glory that will be mine to come? What am I training my soul to do? Am I babying myself and making myself an enabler to lose out on the glory in heaven? Or am I using these afflictions, working for us, for they work for us? These are great verses. They work for us. So where is, there she is. Alyssa, would you, we're going to watch a video. I think we've watched it before. It's about 3 minutes long, and then we're going to close. So a video by Francis Chan on this very thing we're talking about. Chris, would you lower a couple of the lights, the two to the left?
Imagine this rope. Okay, pretend this rope just goes on forever. Okay? Just imagination. Pretend it goes around the world a few times. It doesn't. It ends at the rock. But let's just imagine this thing goes on forever. Now imagine that this rope is a timeline of your existence. You just exist forever. You see this red part? This would represent your time on earth. You've got a few short years here on earth, and then you've got all of eternity somewhere else. This is your existence. And what blows me away is some of you, all you think about is this red part. It's all you think about. You're consumed with this. You go, oh man, I can't wait till here. You know, I'm going to work hard. I'm going to save so I can really enjoy this part right here. And you're consumed with that. And you're thinking, oh man, am I going to get to travel? Am I going to eat well? Am I going to do this during this part? And I'm like, are you kidding me? What about all this stuff? It's crazy to me because the Bible teaches that what I do during this little red part determines how I'm going to exist for millions and millions and millions of years forever. And so why would I spend this little red part trying to make myself as comfortable as possible, enjoying myself as much as I can, Paul says, look, I'm going to live my life for this mission. I'm going to spend my life, invest my life for this moment when I cross that finish line. See, I'm going to forget about all this stuff I could enjoy, and I'm not going to look around. I'm going to be like a runner just looking at that moment when I face God, because when I face Him, then I don't get this chance over again. We get one chance at this life on earth, and it can end at any second for any of us. We've got one chance at this, and then comes eternity. And I'm not going to be fooled. I'm not going to spend my life down here. See, people look at some of my decisions and go, oh, you're so stupid because that's going to really affect this. I go, no, you're stupid because that's going to affect all of this. Man, I'm serious. I look at the way people live and I go, wow, that is so crazy. You are so crazy. You're gonna do that right now, just to enjoy right now, not even knowing if you have tomorrow, and you think that's smart and that I'm dumb? It doesn't make any sense. Paul goes, I'm not going to look around at all this stuff. And it's tempting. It's tempting to all of us. That's what I'm saying down here. It's crazy because everyone lives that way. Everyone lives for the red part. No one's thinking about the millions of years afterwards. It's this crazy deception that we can't get out of our minds. And Paul goes, I'm not doing that. Because I keep my eyes on that. I keep my eyes on that finish line, and I'm going to forget what's behind me. I'm not looking around. I'm straining forward. I'm like stretching forward for that mark. I'm going to pass this thing. I'm going to live this out, and I'm going to face Him. I'm going to come before the judges, and He's going to hand me that trophy. He goes, I'm going to get it, and I haven't gotten there yet. He goes, but you better believe I'm using every muscle, exerting every bit about me, because I'm going to pass that line well.
See, he said in 3 minutes what I said in 45. Turn the lights on. If you will, there's another good one. It's the balance beam. It's about the same length, one that he does a routine on, a balance beam. And anyway, I won't tell you much more, but it's the same flavor. So if you want to see another one of those, it's look under that on YouTube, and it's the balance beam. So open up to Romans chapter 8. We'll close with that. Romans chapter 8. One verse, verse 18. Romans chapter 8, verse 18. All right, Romans 8. Okay, Romans 8, verse 18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. So there it is. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory that shall be revealed in us. Isn't that great? Not just to us, but in us as well. There's the reward. Amen. So that's what Paul says. Not worthy to be compared. Looking off. Taking the telescope and zooming in on those eternal things as trials may come. Even when blessings come, that's a great time to zero in on eternity and thank the Lord. I mean, that's a great lesson to learn, and I've enjoyed it, you know, not boasting, but I don't know why it was, but it's quite a number of years ago, I learned that when good things happen, I have to turn right to the Lord and thank Him for them. They're not mine, they're His, and I need to thank Him for it. So either way, blessings or what seems hardship, focus in on the Lord. Let's close in prayer. Join with me in your hearts as we just offer ourselves afresh to the Lord. Lord, we thank You that You are here by Your Spirit, Lord, to challenge us, Lord, to educate us, to empower us to live the way that You want us to live that would be pleasing to You. Lord, may the truths of these verses, that these things are just temporal, they're light afflictions and they're temporal and they work for us. They're working for us, something in glory, Lord, while we look not on the seen but on the unseen. Because these seen things, they're just going to pass away. But the things that aren't seen, the things that we gaze on in glory, Lord, those are eternal. And help us to do this, Lord. May our minds be renewed. May they be transformed by the renewing of your word, that we may know what is your perfect will, Lord. Just ask your blessing, Lord, upon us as we ponder this message, Lord, throughout the week. Lord, I ask your blessing upon this group, Lord, that as we live out our lives before you first and before others, Lord, I just ask your blessing on them. Lord, make us a happy people, a joyful people. Lord, as Thomas Watson said, we looked at it a week ago, like even as Moses, who looked and saw a bush that was on fire and yet it was not consumed, so would we as Christians be like that bush, that while we were, as it were, being afflicted and burned with affliction, we have a joy within us, and the world looks and says, wow, let me come and look at this sight. Here is a man and a woman, a young person who is going through affliction, and yet they're happy. What a wonder. Lord, help us to live like that. Lord, to set our minds upon these things. Lord, help us just to glory in you. And again, just ask your blessing on us as we go about the week. In Jesus' name, amen.